Welcome to the podcast all about women's wealth. Women's wealth is growing faster than men's. As women in the next generation rise in financial power, women will fundamentally change the meaning of legacy. Women as singles, mothers, wives, or widows not only need access to a full continuum of opportunities to save, invest, and preserve financial assets, they also need access to financial education and coaching, coupled with affordable and appropriate savings and credit building products at key times in their lives. Join us on Women Acquiring Assets and learn the stepping stones to home ownership, investment properties, cryptocurrency, business development, and learn all about saving stocks and so much more. Let's grow our networks together.
Women's Inflection Point is a nonprofit, educational, and results-driven entity providing women a success path to reach maximum potential in each of their life cycle stages. Women's Inflection Point focuses on three tiers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid: human wellness, safety, and self-actualization. In other words, we focus on your health, your money, and yourself. An inflection point is an event that results in dramatic and significant change. Our mission is to facilitate occurrences of inflection points that activate unleashed potential to propel women to reach their maximum potential in all aspects of their life. These occurrences are delivered at events throughout the year in organic and diverse, inclusive environments. For more information, visit us at www.womeninflectionpoint.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Women Acquiring Assets. I'm your host, Annika Jackson. And as you know, every week we love to talk to a grand intersection of women about topics that are important and relevant to us and our lives. So today it is my pleasure to speak to somebody whose shoes I've been in some ways, the current Junior League of Los Angeles president, Bethany Hunter. Welcome, Bethany.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, Annika. And yes, I do remember before being in these shoes that I am filling. That was my first year as a new member. So just watching and observing you kind of represent my new member year. So you're part of, you know, my experience. So just excited to be here and doing this interview with you.
Well, I'm excited to have you here for many, many reasons. There are so many things we could talk about and unpack. So we'll see what we get into. But first, let's talk about beyond Junior League. What do you do in your daily life?
That is a great question. So I used to be an analyst with the city of Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. So I have a rhetoric degree from the University of California, Berkeley. I went on to obtain my master's from USC in public administration. So I have this love for the public sector and really kind of being of service to others. So that took me to the city of Santa Monica, where I really enjoyed kind of this analyst and moving things around and supporting the community. And 2 years ago, I left the city of Santa Monica and really wanted to focus on kind of making a shift and figuring out other ways that I can be of service in kind of the public affairs arena. Mm-hmm. What I'm giving attention to now is decided to start my own kind of consulting and service on the side related to communications and storytelling. I believe storytelling really offers us kind of, it's a equalizer in the world, mm-hmm. because we can all tell our own stories uniquely, and it's a way that we can really communicate who we are. So that's something I just started last year, storytelling for others and helping them communicate who they are and what they have to give on various platforms. So whether it's, you know, in emails to their members and their employees, whether it is attending a conference and you're being a presenter or speaking at a major event. So yeah, that's what I'm currently doing.
Okay, well, we'll have to talk about that because storytelling is my jam. I preach all the time that everything comes down to story.
Yes.
So, and that is the most important thing we have in many ways, because our story, our narrative is what formed who we are. It's what forms everything we do. So even if you have a business, that business exists because of you and your story.
That's exactly what it is, yes.
And now you're turning storytelling into your business. That's amazing. Congratulations. I love it. So how did that journey and that love of public service bring you to Junior League?
Wow, that is a long, that can be a long answer.
Well, yep, we have time.
I want to try to keep it as brief as I can. When I was younger, actually, my mother relocated me and my two younger sisters to California in kind of search of better opportunities. And she found them here in LA, specifically Hawthorne originally. And then we moved to Westchester. But I've always compared my upbringing and what I had access to compared to cousins and extended family in Little Rock, Arkansas. So I've always been aware and kind of cognizant of the opportunities that I've had, and then going off to a university and the opportunities that that presented compared to friends and family in Little Rock, Arkansas. So there was just always this kind of juxtaposition in terms of what I was seeing in Little Rock compared to California. And then moving to the Bay Area and continuing to see it in Oakland versus being on the campus of Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
So I've always had an interest in kind of serving. And that's really where I started to dig in and be a mentor and be active. And coming back to LA, looking for additional opportunities to be involved, really beyond direct service and volunteering, because I still mentor the young lady that I met when I was in college at the time.
Oh, wonderful.
She was in fourth grade. She's since graduated from San Jose State, Dante Moore, and is doing amazing things. So I still had the direct service component. So I was volunteering with my church, volunteering with the Alumni Association, the Cal Alumni Association. But the piece that I was missing was public policy.
Hmm.
That's really what brought me to the Junior League of Los Angeles. I had kind of wanted to explore public policy and whether I was going to go to law school. The original idea was law school and public policy. And then I said, you know what, I think I'm going to do law school and public administration.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just shifted to public administration.
Yeah.
But the Junior League of Los Angeles had the Public Policy Institute. And it was something, again, that I was really interested in exploring, because I think public policy is your opportunity to touch on so many lives. So it's been great that I can touch Dante's life directly on an individual basis, but public policy offers you the opportunity to impact more lives than you would, you know, touch directly. So that's through legislation and everything. So that's really why I wanted to join the Junior League of Los Angeles. I saw the Public Policy Institute and I jumped in, and I didn't expect that I'd be serving as president, but here I am.
Here you are. And I, for those in the audience who don't know what Junior League is, do you want to give your elevator speech?
Oh, I would love to give my elevator speech. I won't give the direct one, but the Junior League of Los Angeles is a women's civic leadership organization. That's really how I talk about this, Junior League of Los Angeles. And we're really about preparing women or enhancing the skills that they already have to be leaders in the community, to be leaders in the workplace, to be leaders in their home, because really transforming lives is what the Junior League is about. And we recognize the potential and the power that women have, and we really want to harness that. So we want to harness it, you know, as individuals, and we want to harness it as a collective. So we do that through trainings. We do that through our public policy work, which I was speaking to before. We do it through community and projects. So we have projects, standing projects with different community partners. And we also do it by doing things like fundraising. So fundraising for the work that we do in the community. And it's just an amazing organization that's made up of women, women who want to serve their community, women who want to do better, and women who want to lead. So that is what the Junior League of Los Angeles is to me.
And I love that. For me, Junior League was a place to get a lot of that training to be able to go on and do
yes.
other things. And I think that is... it's a good thing and downfall as well, right? Because you get a lot of amazing training at Junior League and then go off and take it to other places in the community.
Yes.
But sometimes Junior League needs those volunteers back too to continue leading and to continue teaching and doing things. So many people that we know, including myself, I mean, I've started nonprofits because of the experience I gained during Junior League. I've served on multiple boards. I've learned, that was where I really learned how to work with a group of volunteers, how to evaluate a program and see how effective it is, how it could be more effective, what things could change it. And also really speaking to people in the community and listening to their needs.
Yes.
Right? Especially with touching on the advocacy. It's not just, yes, there is the service need, but the Junior League also brings in, well, how can we help advocate for you with the legislature? What things, what bipartisan issues, you know, and that was something when I was president and even the year or two before that, that was actually pretty revolutionary in that we were already dealing with anti-trafficking issues, making sure to look at people as victims and survivors, not as perpetrators, right? When women were getting arrested for things, and it's like, well, wait a minute. It's not, they're not in the situation because this is what they want to do.
Right, right.
So, and in more recent years, I know that things have shifted a little bit where, you know, my kind of big view was always, Junior League is an international organization of women who focus on women and children's health and education issues in our local communities, and then blah, 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 blah. But it's been become even more fine-tuned, right? So in LA, we focus a lot on foster youth, and that's not just girls, it's boys also. And a lot of leagues around the country have really honed in their messaging based on what the needs are of their individual communities.
I think that's what makes it so unique from other organizations. It really is focused on what are the needs of that community. So as you said, even during the program evaluation piece, we're talking to the community, seeing how we can be responsive, figuring out how we can really harness these members that we have, you know, more than 900 to provide service to legislate. To advocate and everything. So that's why I think it's so unique. And you could go from, to go to another state, you can go to another city, as we have a Junior League in Long Beach, we have a Junior League in Pasadena, and they're serving those communities so uniquely. And that's what I really love about the Junior League and being able to find your place and continue to be of service. So I love all of that. And I think what you shared before in terms of understanding language and the needs and really that shift in how we talk about, you know, survivors of human trafficking and, you know, really kind of being leaders in that space and convening. That's what I really enjoyed about the Junior League and continuing to learn. So I'm not quite sure I would have spent time learning about this,
right,
through the Cal Alumni Association or through the church where I volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of learning that I've really done through the Junior League. And to your point, now, you know, we have women, our members, who are going and starting nonprofits, who are going and leading and lending their voice on other boards and commissions and such. So it's really a powerful and impactful body that I'm just excited to say that I'm, you know, I'm a member of. So, yeah.
Yes. And president during a really pivotal time in U.S. history. We've talked about this before, just in our own conversations. You're only the second Black president in Los Angeles in 95 years. I believe that I'm the second Asian. I could be wrong. I could be the first, but I think there was somebody way back who snuck in there. I'd have to look it up. But I also say, if I were still living in Kansas where I grew up, I probably never would have joined because I wouldn't see people like me joining, right? I would think there were barriers to entry. And I think that's one misconception people have probably around Junior League. They see it as like women with pearls and white gloves and very antiquated. The word junior is in there, and that's not who we are at all. I mean, maybe some, you know, sometimes, yes, we dress up and wear pearls or whatever, but it's really about that work. It's really about serving the community, and it's about forming friendships with other women who have that same heart.
Exactly. I mean, we can definitely be multi-dimensional. We can enjoy like the pearls and the gloves, but to your point, it really is about that service. And how do we, you know, as we were saying before, begin to really tell that story? Because that, you know, that piece, that the pearls and the junior and some of the stuff that is known, you know, it comes from somewhere. It comes from our history, a history that's been exclusionary. So there is, I think, some work that we have to continue to do around that. I think, you know, our first president, Nessa Okonkwo, was during our 91st anniversary. So to your point, I definitely think that's a long time. I'm sure, I'm more than positive that there were qualified Black women, you know, other women of color who had the skills and knowledge and passion to lead. So that's something I'm always trying to, you know, to reconcile in my head. Mm-hmm. So how do we create opportunities, a pipeline for other women of color, and, you know, think through what those barriers look like and start to address that. You know, something I really struggled with this year and really, you know, trying to process very intimate feelings, you know, and leading this organization that's made up of women who mostly do not look like me, just being, you know, completely transparent, sitting in board meetings. I think you've read the communication where after the civil unrest following the murder of George Floyd, we had to push out a communication very quickly, and that week was very stressful. We had you know, board trainings on a Friday. Board trainings were on a Saturday, and I was doing other work trying to get communications together on that Wednesday and Thursday. And then everything was starting to evolve from Wednesday through Friday. And we're sitting here supporting our Minneapolis League, because that's where a lot of this had occurred. And at the same time, trying to prepare a communication while also processing my feelings. And by the time we were able to get things together on Sunday and take a break, I also had to start preparing for a board meeting on that Tuesday. And, you know, in hindsight, I realized that the meeting probably should have been canceled, but I'm trying to push through and prioritize the Junior League of Los Angeles. So yeah. I broke down in that meeting and cried, and thankful to have board members who are supportive and an advisor that said, you know what, we should wrap this meeting up early. But I do think that some of the things that, you know, we have to be mindful of in this space and in this year, how we are supporting women of color, you know, our Black women and those who are in this space. And we're typically not having these conversations around race and classism and sexism because we've been uncomfortable. And right. Now it's just kind of been pushed to the forefront, and we're saying it's important. And, you know, I recognize there are people who are feeling like they're left behind. There's no place for them in this conversation. And my thought is there is a place for everyone in DEI. DEI is inclusive to represent everyone. So that's what I try to think through and remember as I move forward with this work here in the Junior League of Los Angeles.
Yeah, and it's you certainly, when you accepted the role and became president-elect, had no idea that you would be president through a pandemic, through a time of great division and unrest, and a time when people did have to really look themselves in the mirror and live with who they are, live with their thoughts, their feelings, their biases, and be confronted with the fact that many things have happened in our lives that we haven't had to deal with because we're just so busy dealing with our own lives. We haven't watched the news. We haven't paid attention to the issues. But that's, you know, but they're happening. And if you are a person of color, you have internalized and been dealing with them.
Yes.
The fact that other people are just now shining a spotlight on it.
That's what it is.
You know, doesn't mean it hasn't always been there. Yeah, so that's, I was president 10 years ago. I didn't have to deal with any of this. We had no germane issues really happening that, I mean, some of the same issues probably, but we just, you know, we did what we could and we tried to bring in new programs and different things, but it, I think that's one thing about the world of nonprofits is it they don't move quickly. It takes a long time to move that ship, right? It's like an inch a year or something. So what are some of the tips, tricks, thoughts that you have to other nonprofit leaders out there who might be wondering how to navigate this time, how to bring up hard conversations, how to change narratives? Because I do feel that you've instituted some conversations and some things this year that maybe make it a little more palatable or easier for people to start joining the conversation if they don't feel that there's a place for them. You know, you've been very inviting and welcoming.
Well, thank you. It is not easy. We're not moving at the pace that I would love us to be moving at, but to your point, how do we make it more palatable and how do we bring people along? And acknowledging that, I know it takes time. I know it involves that storytelling and it involves really kind of having your ear to the ground. So of course I can't be in every circle. I can't be in all places, but ensuring that I'm communicating with various members and understanding kind of how they see the Junior League, how they see themselves in the Junior League, and how they see the Junior League in the world is really how I've approached it. Mm-hmm. So making sure that I am talking to kind of a cross section of our membership. So our new members, including our sustainers. So our sustainers are members who completed so many years of service in the organization, and they've transitioned to a point where they are sustaining the organization, but they're not actively participating in our direct service opportunities because we now see them as members who are more than likely out serving on boards and commissions, and to your point, you know, starting their own organizations and nonprofits. So a lot of it has involved my talking to those members. And I think it's interesting, what I've learned is that there's just a lot of assumptions out there about our sustainers. And our sustainers have been some of the most supportive members, not to say our actives or new members are not, but I've received so many emails and phone calls from our sustainers just saying, I'm glad you're bringing this up. I know this must be difficult, but we appreciate you. So that's been a lot of what I've done, just making sure I'm connecting, or I'm connecting with members who are in touch with members that I may not have access to. The other thing that I'm doing is, you know, just acknowledging what's going on in the world around us and touching it back to our values. So in the Junior League, we say we value diversity, we value community, we value service and leadership. And when we are having challenging times or kind of at a standstill in terms of making a decision, I'm like, hey, is this consistent with our values and what we say to be important and what who we are in the world and in the LA community? So that's some of the things that I've really done to move this work forward and to even really challenge myself in moving this work forward. Because, you know, you only get one shot, as you know, in this position, and it'll be ending soon. And you don't know what the person after you is going to do. And that's not to say that they won't support this work, but you know, there's 1 year and you don't know what that person year is going to bring. Mm-hmm. So really using this opportunity to say, you know what, we're going to make a difference. We're going to have an impact. And how do we steer such a big ship, which I think is what you were really, you know, getting at, because this is an organization of more than 900 women with a 95-year history. So of course it does take some time. And there are some things I'm like, I would love for us to be moving more quickly, but recognizing that, you know, there are so many different personalities, there's so many pieces that you have to shift. Yeah. And a part of what I'm doing this year is planting the seed. So recognizing that all the things that I want to see are not going to happen, but if I'm being collaborative, if I'm having conversations with different members, the new member, the active, the sustainer who's going to ask the question about where do we stand with this, I think this work is important because you can't be an island doing all the work. So that's also how I've really focused on moving this work forward.
I think that's one of the biggest things I learned when I was going up in leadership in Junior League was, because I've always loved collaboration, but in that moment, I really realized that you do have to make sure you're bringing everybody along.
Yes.
And that takes a lot more time and energy.
Oh, yes. Oh,
if, you have, yes. If you have 50, you know, you it's kind of like the government. If you have a majority of people who are like, yes, let's make these changes, but you have other people who are not happy with them or they don't really understand, it's better to, in our case, make sure that everybody feels comfortable with what we're doing moving forward. And, you know, the year I was president is the year that we changed a lot of the governance structure. Yeah. And it took several years after that to make it happen, but it was several years before me that that seed was planted. I mean, probably even longer than that, but I remember sitting in strategic planning meetings when I wasn't even on the board yet, where wow. I was just a committee member and people were talking about, well, we really need to change the structure, you know, and it took time. The other thing I really learned is that you can't dictate how it gets done, right? You, yes. As long as the work gets done in an impactful way, somebody might have a completely different way of doing it that you don't think is efficient or that you don't really understand, but it's not up to you because this is a learning experience for everybody. And if you micromanage, yes. And you're never, you're going to just drive yourself crazy. Yeah. And so that takes us into self-care. How do you take care of yourself? This has been, I mean, truly, honestly, I can't imagine being the second Black president during all of the unrest that's been happening and the pandemic, having to completely shift all of the resources of the Junior League, how we fundraise, how we interact with community partners, how we make sure we're creating an impact in the community, how we're serving our members, how we're making sure that members are okay and that they know it's okay to not be okay, but to bring up conversations about that.
Wow. And self-care for me has been at the center of it. When you say it all that way, I'm like, that is very much a lot, but I forget about it when I'm trying to jump in and really prioritize the organization. Yeah. So as I said before, in June, that was definitely a lot, broke down at our first board meeting. And I said, you know what, I need to step back and make sure I'm taking time for myself. So if I'm not pouring into myself, I can't pour into the Junior League of Los Angeles. I can't pour into friends and family. So what good am I at that point? Yeah. You know, I think there's been a lot of conversation around resilience. And it's interesting because just this year, I've started to kind of resist this idea around resilience and Black women being resilient and strong, because I think in some ways it can dehumanize us. And there's not this idea or this concept around it, us needing the self-care and taking time for ourselves. So right now how I'm seeing self-care is a act of resistance. And I wish I had my notes by my book, because there's this quote by Audre Lorde that's really resonating with me about self-care is about self-preservation, and it's a it's like an act of war and such. I don't have all the language, but that's how I'm seeing self-care now. So I'm taking the time to say, you know what, I'm going to prioritize me. And when I do this, I can really give more to the Junior League of Los Angeles. And I think it's important that we're communicating that to the membership, because we are a membership organization. So if I'm running things in a particular way, I'm sure that's translating to our president-elect who oversees our management council, and that's translating to her vice presidents who then supports chairs and chairs who are supporting our committee members. And at the end of the day, you know, we are very much committed to putting on trainings that support our members who, you know, may be leaving the workforce. providing direct service to the community. But if we don't have members to do that work, it means nothing. So I've been transparent in communications about the need to prioritize self-care. I think I put something out in November about the things that I was going to do, and really in hopes of encouraging others to do the same, to take a step back, knowing that that email will be there later, or that that project can have your attention at some other point. You know, on the board of directors, we had two members step down. So the president-elect and secretary, and it was all focused around self-care and the need to prioritize self. And I think I commend them, and I think it's something that we all need to be more mindful of. So, you know, those are things that I'm constantly thinking through for our membership, and just more tangible things that I do is I have horrible sleep habits. So I need a sleep app to ensure that I can, when I'm really stressed out, I pop up in the middle of the night running around thinking I've forgotten to do something, which has not happened. So I think that means I'm doing better. So I listen to a sleep app, Sleep With Me. Some affirmation. So when I'm really stressed out, it's so weird. I'll hit it, and it's the affirmation that I need in that moment.
Wonderful.
And I have this two box of cards that really help me kind of be more intentional about being in the moment. So those are some of the tangible things that I do to really ground myself. And I love to listen to music and kind of dance around the house to relax. So yeah, those are some things I do around self-care.
Those are amazing things. And we are going to just take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Annika Jackson. At Annika PR, we provide public relations strategy, content marketing, and brand and design services. We are gifted with the ability to draw excitement to an event, brand, or concept. Don't just take our word for it. See our clients' work in Forbes, CNN, Amazon TV shows, and much more. Want your brand amplified? Go to AnikaPR.com. That's AnikaPR.com.
And we are back on Women Acquiring Assets. And I'm your host, Annika Jackson. I am here with Bethany Hunter, who is the current president of Junior League of Los Angeles. Where I don't want to say our stories, because that's not quite the right word, but we're just talking about our Junior League experience and how it really is an organization that serves women and serves the communities that we're in. We've talked about a lot of things today: self-care, mission focus, training, how to work with volunteers, how to talk about difficult issues.
Yes.
And thinking about Junior League of Los Angeles in particular deals with self-esteem and empowerment of foster youth and underserved students seeking higher education. What are some of the current programs and work based upon, again, going back to, we talk to our community, we find out what the community really needs. So what are some of the needs of the community in this, and how are we working with underserved students and foster youth currently?
That is a great question. So one of the things that we did earlier this year in response to COVID is we said, we know that many of us are not in person. So what is it specifically that you need? What is it that, you know, those that you serve, what do they need? And I thought that was one of the most powerful things that we could do, not making assumptions, not going there trying to offer what we want to offer, or, you know, this kind of cookie cutter program. It's like, you know what, we want to be responsive to you. So we have partnerships and active projects with Happy Trails. We have a project with Friends of LA, as well as with Alliance for Children's Rights and UFC, United Friends of the Children. So a lot of this is centered around supporting foster youth and transition age foster youth. So transition age foster youth being those who are transitioning out of the foster care system, but acknowledging that there's still support that they need. You know, at 21, were you able to, 18, 21, were you able to and ready to move out on your own? You know, a job that could really sustain you in terms of, you know, paying rent and taking on other responsibilities. So some of the work that we do is around transition age foster youth. Mm. With our active projects, we are really providing the care that they need in this moment. So some of that is around college readiness with our project with UFC, United Friends of the Children. So prepping them, doing workshops on a weekly basis. And some of that has pivoted in this environment. Of course, there's still the prep and ensuring that they are transitioning to that next stage. But that's a lot of what we do with UFC. With Alliance for Children's Right, what I love about this project specifically is that originally the thought was that it would center around women. We saw a need to also support families, and they're bringing their children, so their daughters and nieces, whoever else may be in the household and working with them, so because they may not have childcare. So I love that the Junior League was able to stop and say, you know what, we need to adapt this program to the needs of those that we're serving. So with Alliance for Children's Rights, we're working with young women who may have children and who are really trying to figure out how to navigate in this world, because it's made things that they haven't learned, and there are things that I really wasn't aware of when I was 18, 19, 20, paying rent. There were times when I was in college that I... my family didn't have the means to help me pay rent, so I would go and get an emergency student loan from the college campus because I didn't really think through how to properly budget. Mm. So having those conversations with these women that we work with, thinking through and providing kind of, as we said before, that self-care piece and how do you take the time to care for yourself. So that's some of the work that we're doing with those in the community around foster care youth and transition age foster youth.
Wonderful. And have you seen, I'm sure you said you've seen some shifts in how to deliver programming and what programming needs to be delivered. And this isn't necessarily an issue area that we're not necessarily dealing with the mental health aspects that they're dealing with. But have you seen that kind of leak into the programming we need to provide as well, just to make sure, yes, we're providing, okay, let's go over this curriculum, let's help you understand how to do a job interview or how to apply for college, or when you get to campus, here are things that you can do, here, club, whatever it is, but have you seen a need for us to also be able to support in other ways, whether it's, with being people of color, as well as dealing with being a foster kid and a student who, is coming with nothing.
Yeah, there's that intersectionality that we need to have conversations around. So, transition age foster youth, then there's the LGBTQ community and what that means for foster youth. So, being someone in the foster care system who's of color. So there's so many things that we can really kind of think through as we talk about foster youth. And there's a lot to unpack and a lot in terms of how we can provide support. But just as we, as women, and as, members of this organization, we're just seeing the challenges that we're having. You're being at home and you're trying to support and provide childcare or ensure that the child that you're supporting, so whether you are the parent or a guardian, that, they're doing their studies and their homework. There's still that happening in these spaces that our foster youth are in, but it may be compounded by not being able to pay rent, being worried about where the next meal will come from. So earlier this year, we had someone from Emporium, it's one of our community partners, come in and speak to the board of directors. And what she shared is that, what is really needed right now is support, is cash, to pay the rent, to ensure that we have food on the table. There is that mental and well-being piece. So we are trying to provide support around that. So there are so many needs. And, I think what I would love to see the Junior League continue to do is pivot and be responsive in that way. What are the needs, and acknowledging that if we're here to support the community, that, you know, because we care about the community and those we're serving, we're going to pivot, even if it causes us to kind of spin our heads and be frustrated, we're going to be responsive in the way that the community needs. And I think our Done in a Day committee has done a great job of saying, hey, what is needed in terms of this space, the unhoused population, what is needed for foster care youth, and how can we be of service? How can we provide the things that they need? And it's been amazing to watch it all unfold with volunteers.
Amazing, yeah. Wow, well, I know for Junior League, we can find Junior League at jlla.org or at JL Los Angeles on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. How do people find Buffany? How do people find you?
Well, that is a great, they can find me by email at jlla dot, have a unique name, Buffany. So if there's ever something you want to send directly to me by email, you can send it there. I am on Instagram, and I'm really starting to feel more free and kind of own who I am on Instagram as opposed to Facebook. So you can find me on Instagram as B_U_unique or unique. So it's basically be unique, B for Buffany, underscore U for the next initial, B-F-F-A-N-Y, and then the Neek. So my middle name is Nicole. So B underscore U underscore Neek, N-I-C. So that's where you can find me on Instagram, where I'm talking about what's happening in my daily life, what's happening with the Junior League, and what I'm enjoying reading and the other spaces that I'm active in. I'm active in Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, and the other things that I think are important, such as responding to COVID-19 and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you can find me on Facebook at Buffany Hunter. So B-U-F-F-A-N-Y Hunter on Facebook.
Wonderful. Well, there's so much more to unpack here, but we are going to just leave it here for our audience today. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
Well, I would love to share a couple of things. I think one, just thank you for being a role model and for leading the Junior League of Los Angeles, you know, and really thinking through the representation and being an example for so many women in the Junior League. One, again, being me, because that's when I was a new member. As I said before, I always associate my new member year with you. So you didn't know that, but you never know who is watching. So that's what I would also add, is that you never know who is watching you, who sees you as an example. And, you know, when you're interacting with someone, you know, what you may be able to impart with them, or you may be able to leave with them. So the impact that you're able to have on someone just by a brief interaction, or, you know, the interaction that they may have with you from afar. The other thing that I would want to leave with this, with our audience, is that, you know, our time is now. And I think this is really the year of the woman, just seeing everything that has occurred over the last year and women leading. You know, don't wait on the next person to say yes or to activate and do something that you believe is important and that you want to see action around. And I think you'll, you know, kind of see that with me over the next several months, particularly with a response to COVID-19 and health inequities. So that's what I would leave. And I would encourage women, you know, I love the fact that you are empowering women to lead and to own their voices and helping to amplify voices. So be true to who you are and be authentic as we talk about storytelling. So yes.
Wonderful.
That is it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on today. And thank you to our audience for listening to another edition. And we'll be back again next week.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this episode.
To learn more about who we are and what we do, visit www.womeninflectionpoint.org/WAA. If you have anything you'd like to share, Annika would love to hear from you. And she can be reached at info@womeninflectionpoint.org. Be sure to tune in every week for another episode and learn more about how financial assets are a store of resources that women and families can tap into, particularly during emergencies, and how wealth can provide a nest egg that can be leveraged into investments like a home, an investment property, or a business, and then can be passed on to future generations. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.